Podcast. 73%? That's like 7 out of 10 of our children born to single parent homes.
I'm talking real issues, real
That's
time.
The problem. It starts with us. It begins with us. We need to choose each other. You understand that? We can win this.
Welcome to the Queen Rain Podcast. I am your host, Queen Rain Raphael, and this is the Year of the Throne Room, where we interview men of color every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear their thoughts, concerns, and beliefs in a transparent, unedited way. Now, the purpose of the Throne Room is to create a space for men of color to feel heard and respected. That goes regardless of if I agree with them or not. As a woman of color, seeking brown family restoration, I believe that these conversations are the start of our culture's healing. They're vital to rebuilding the trust between us, and they are worth your listen. So I thank you for being willing to do so. Now, let's get started.
This call is now being recorded.
Hello, hello. Is this Anthony McDonald?
Yes, this is me. How are you doing, Queen Rain?
I'm doing good, my brother King. I am so excited to do this interview with you. First of all, I just want to welcome you as an author, an entrepreneur, like a dual citizen, husband, and father to the Throne Room. I just appreciate you coming in because, you know, you just amaze me with what you're doing since we met about 12 years ago on the set of a reality show in St. Louis, right?
Yes.
Since the grind with, you know, Murphy Lee and everything, I wanted to get into all the little things that I know you're doing for this really unique story you've built with your family since then. But first I got to read you my disclaimer, okay?
Okay.
So the disclaimer is that this, phone call will be recorded for the purpose of a podcast. It cannot and it will not be edited in sections as the authentic flow of this dialogue is important to the intent of the show. Is that comfortable for you?
It's very comfortable for me.
All right, good, good, good. So let's get started. I want to start with you professionally as we'll get into your international business with your wife shortly after, but tell us where you're from and what your upbringing was like.
Unfortunately, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri.
Unfortunately.
Well, I say that in comedy. Really, when I'm in Africa, I always say that because my brothers and sisters there, you know, they know much more about themselves when you ask them where they're from. So I always say, unfortunately, I'm from America or from St. Louis. No, just making light of it. But my upbringing, you know, I grew up, you know, in St. Louis. We grew up in the hood, the ghetto, as we used to call it back then. We was very poor. Mom, dad, you know, three siblings. We had the two parent household, which I appreciated. A lot of friends in the neighborhood, they didn't have a two family household. Although there was still dysfunction, you know, in the household. My father was an alcoholic. We was poor. You know, he was working. He was employed. Used to bring his check home to my mom. You know, so she struggled. She sacrificed, like, literally the true word of sacrifice, neglected all of her needs to take care of the kids, you know, to buy for the kids. So all those things are lessons that I learned. You know, I learned from all of those things, even from the alcoholism. You know, so though that's you know, I grew up, you know, I was a straight A student, you know, I always wanted to excel in school. However, I had a darker side. I always wanted to excel, but in my little tiny brain that wasn't able to function life the way that, you know, you're able to at an older age, I thought that I could take shortcuts. So I decided to take many shortcuts once I got into high school. Looking out the window of our one-bedroom apartment, seeing guys in the neighborhood flourishing from the illegal drug business, and I was impressed. I was extremely impressed. So therefore, I felt that would be a shortcut for me, opposed to taking the four-year route, you know, the college route, which I could have easily swung, you know, bad at, and I'm sure I would have excelled that way as well. So that's just a bit about, you know, me, my past, you know, where I come from, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's awesome, because I'm glad you touched on some of the bitter and the sweet of it, because, you know, I've been watching you over the years, and you know, I wanted to know, did you have supportive parents? Because you're one of those people who get the mind to just do something and then you go get it done. And I'm one of those people too, but I don't meet that many people who are like, I see it, I think it, I'm going to do it, because it's not existent. So, you know, where do you think that confidence comes from? Being that, you know, do you think it's because you had the two parents in the home, or because, you know, even you said you had the mind to like, listen, I'm going to go make us some money, and you just went out and did that despite, you know, what you may have thought would be a better route, or were told was a better route. So tell me, where does the confidence come from to just go out and make your own way like that?
Well, that's a very good question. And in my earlier years as a child, I did not feel I had supportive parents. You know, I had a two-parent household. There was in my book, A Father's Fight, I spoke up, I touched
yes,
upon.
Yes, we're going to get into that. Yes.
Pertaining to my upbringing and stuff, as it relates to even my biological, no, my father. I'm not going to say biological, but I only have one father. As it relates to my father, you know, as I told you, I chose the street life, but he was the first person in my entire life to actually pull a gun on me, to actually threaten to take my life. Yeah. So these were part of the challenges. So, even when I used to be a big dreamer, I'm a Pisces, you know, March 8th okay. Pisces to the core. So in Pisces, we're dreamers. We're like, we think we could conquer the whole entire world and there beyond. So, I've always been a dreamer. I always wanted the skies and even more. So I will always come to my mom with these lavish dreams of what I wanted. And, you know, she's from the South. She's from, you know, she saw Jim Crowism. You know, she's from Alabama. So, the safety net of a mother was to is to protect your child. So coming from the Jim Crow South, it was always, boy, that's just foolish. You just go to school, get a good education so you get a good job. That was the teaching. So I was often discouraged from my dreams. So I was always a person that was challenging, you know. So if you told me no, to me that was like fuel to my fire that I can do, you know. So that's the inspiration came from within. It came from more so of a challenge of me needing to prove myself.
Mm. Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah, I don't take no's very often. I don't take we can't very often. Yeah, I get that. I do. And I want to wish you a happy birthday, because this actually will air possibly the day of or the week after your birthday. So, we want to wish you a happy birthday. Absolutely. I know you wrote a book, and I was really interested in that too. Cause you know, after we parted ways, we kind of did some of the same things. So but for your book, it got into some very high places, I saw. And can you just tell us one more time the name of the book, what it's generally about, and then some great experiences you had with it?
Well, my first book that I penned is called Risen, From Jamestown to the White House. And it's a book on history. You know, it chronologicalizes African-American or Africans turned African-Americans achievements and different turmoils that we went through from the 1619 point of inception of us being captured and tormented, brought here, enslaved. So Jamestown symbolizes where the first 21 enslaved Africans arrived here in America up to the White House. At that time, this is when former President Barack Obama was elected the first African-American president to the United States. So the book chronologicalizes, 150-plus African / African-Americans, their journey from where they come from, the struggles that they had to endure, all the way up into the achievement of us being seated in the White House. So that was the first book that I wrote, and I actually wrote that book because of my oldest son, Anthony Jr. At that time, he was in grade school. He was 10 years old, and he was being taught Black history. And he was going to a white school. So I didn't want white people teaching my son about his history. So I felt that I had to take the initiative to teach him his true history and not the watered-down Dr. King social political correctness version
right.
of our history. So mm-hmm. I started researching different things, our historical events, that took place for Black Americans. So I started doing so much research, and I actually started falling in love with all the achievements and all the good, but the bad. So I started falling in love with all the things that we've been through, all the challenges that we was able to overcome. So at that point, I felt like I should share this not with just my son, Junior, but with the world. So that's what made me write my first book, Risen from Jamestown to the White House.
That's awesome. I am so proud of you. And tell me, was that self-published and where can we get that?
It was self-published and it's on all the online portals, the Amazons, any online book portal. You can find it, anywhere, on the web.
Okay, definitely. We need to go out and support that book. I actually have a similar story with my son being, in a predominantly white school. And I think it's important for us to, bolster ourselves with definitely the achievements of our ancestry, not so much of just the harm and the devastation as well. It's good to compound that with the things that we've done in spite of all of that pain. So that's really dope. I'm going to look that up myself, actually.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Tell me, let's move on to this story about how a Black man now from St. Louis, okay, ends up in Uganda happily. What brought you to Africa, man?
Africa. Okay, so you want the honest story?
Of course.
Okay, in 2010, I kind of made a decision in my life. I've only dated or involved myself with Black women only. I'm not a social politically correct person, so I'm not. Pardon me if I don't be politically correct while we're on your show.
You don't have to be politically correct on here. This is where men can speak how they speak. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not into white women. They're not attracted to me at all. I'm not into Asian women. They're not attracted to me at all. I'm not into anyone but Black women. To me, Black women are gods. They're goddesses. Just from their mannerisms, their bodies, just everything, their face, the skin complexion. I love everything about a Black woman. Now, I face challenges with former relationships. We all face challenges with former relationships. It's part of life, in dealing with sisters, African-American sisters, So
okay.
The last sister I was in a relationship with, she was very beautiful, extremely beautiful, and she was very progressive as far as, economically and business-wise.
Yeah.
But she had a lot of anger. And I understood that she had challenges from her upbringing as well, but she brought it to the relationship and she was angry all the time. And that I didn't need that energy around me. So I kind of, sort of was fed up with dealing with sisters, but I didn't want to stop dealing with Black women. So at that point, I was like, what do I do? I was like, I can't go to the white woman. That's just unheard of. It won't happen to me, period.
Right.
I'd rather remain the most celibate man on earth before I even give myself to a white woman. That's just me. that's just me.
Okay, tell the truth.
So at that point, I was like, what about African women? I heard about their cultures, their values. So I actually started dating a African woman here that she was my publicist for my first book. So I started dating her. She was from Zambia. And I enjoyed their mannerism, their morals, their upbringing. So fast forward, I was doing a project. I was working for a local TV station, and I was doing a project, and I was I was working for the local TV station, but I was also working for a political campaign. It was a young Black man here in St. Louis was running for mayor. So during his campaign, I was one of the production managers for his media outlet. So we had an online news source, and one of my journalists was from Uganda. So one day she was late in sending in her story. So I asked her, why is this story not in? We need the story. She was like, oh, I'm sorry, but I was going to the coronation of our king. I've never heard of a coronation of a king before, ever in my life.
Yeah.
I'm like, what in the world is that? So she told me about the coronation. She's like, you should come do a documentary on our king. He's the youngest monarch to ever be crowned in world history. I was like, okay, tell me more. So she was telling me about her king, telling me about, you know, his seat. And I was like, well, I'd be willing to come do a documentary if you get permission for me to do so. So she's like, okay, let me talk to the queen mother and find out, you know, to get permission. So the next day she called me. It's like, I just spoke with the queen mother. She did grant permission for you to come down and do the documentary. So that was my inlet to Uganda. I flew in,
wow,
did the documentary on King Oyo. He's the youngest monarch to ever be crowned in world history. He was crowned at the age of 3. So there's never any, and he was not able to take his throne until he was 18. His kingdom was governed by a board, which included the president of Uganda, the prince, which is his uncle, and other royals, families that was around the region until he,
wow,
was of age to take the kingdom, you know, to take the seat. So that's what brought me to Uganda.
Wow, that is a super interesting story. And I think that's really dope, how it mixes politics with black legality and all of that. That's really cool. And
yes.
I said you had dual citizenship, but I don't even know if you do. I'm personally seeking dual citizenship for my fiance and I eventually, because we have a Kenyan god baby. So, okay. Yeah. So, tell me if you do have it, what that process was like. And if not, then tell me, is it even necessary since you frequent there so much?
Okay, let me digress a little, because I believe you asked me how did I meet my wife as well. So,
Not yet.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you asked that.
Wait, did I ask you that? Hold on. I have that. Nope, I have that next.
Okay, great. I'll wait. I'll be patient. So,
okay.
Dual citizenship. In Uganda, you're able to one of the ways you can obtain citizenship is being married to a native. So you have to be married to a native for a period of 3 years to gain citizenship. That is one of the ways. Now, I've been married to my wife. We're celebrating our 4th year anniversary in May.
Congratulations,
of this year.
Guys.
Thank you. And then we had our first son together. We had him in Uganda. So he has dual citizenship. He's a Ugandan mm-hmm. citizen and he's a U.S. citizen because of my citizenship. Now,
mm.
What I'm qualified for is residency. So when I go back to Uganda in a few months, that's when I would apply for my extra residency. And then I have to be a resident for a few years. And then at that point, that's when I get my citizenship as well.
Wow, that's really, really super dope. Okay, so let's get into it because we mentioned your beautiful, beautiful wife. It's Matrimony March, and I know you're married to a beautiful Ugandan queen. She's currently pregnant with your second child together, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I know, unfortunately, she's mourning the loss of her matriarch. Her grandmother passed away, so please send her my love and tell her, you know, we're thinking of her. But I want you to tell me how you met the amazing Sarah Lukwago. And tell me, you know, she's the creator of Nasali Wear, which we'll get into, but what's your love story?
Okay, and now, Lukwago is her father's name. Her name, is, and she used that as her Facebook name, but her name is Sarah Nasali. That's where you get Nasali Wear from, because she's in Uganda or in Africa, most African countries, they call you from your last name first because that's your more so your name. So So she will be called Nasali Sarah, and I will be called McDonald Anthony. Even when I'm in McDonald, I'll be like, hey, McDonald. You know, that's how they address me. So,
okay.
Which is funny. So the way hey, baby boy, sorry, I'm just getting home.
So
the way the way me and Sarah met was I was in Uganda. After I went to Uganda to film the documentary,
mm-hmm.
I fell in love with Uganda, completely in love, like a magical love story in love. So
Africa is beautiful.
Point,
People don't even realize it.
You can never imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Words cannot describe the beauty of Africa. So anyway, when I fell in love with Uganda, so I went back after the documentary. I kept going back on my own. Just literally, I will go back maybe every 3 months and stay for at least a month.
So, wow.
So I will stay for at least a month every time I go back. And then I got to the point where I will stay for 3 months. And then so in 2015, that's when I met Sarah. I was there in Kampala at a grocery store called Mega Standard. So I was in there just getting a few things at the grocery store, and she, you know, I was kind of lost in one of the aisles and was asking for help. And she had, you know, actually was nice enough to help me. And from that point, you know, we exchanged contacts, and then we, you know, went on our first date, you know, went out to eat. And at that point, she was telling me her story, and I found out, you know, I hope I'm not skipping or going too fast.
No, go right ahead.
But during this particular date, she was telling me her story about her her passion for fashion and her desire to study fashion, you know, but her parents had lacked the financing to send her to school. So she, and actually during that date, she was wearing a dress that she had made on her own. And that's what sparked up the conversation, because I was like, wow, I really love your dress. You look really nice. And she told me that she made the dress. So that was kind of like our beginning.
That's beautiful. And I mean, my lady can sew. I love her stuff. I still have every intention of her adorning me in so many different ways. But, you know, I love how hard you go for her. And, you know, in my union with Sire, he's a major supporter and investor in my personal brand as well as our companies together that we're starting. But I wanted you to talk to me about her, since you mentioned it, her recent success in Fashion Week, you know, and what that took for you two to achieve, and just how your marriage is structured as a business as well as personally, because I know you are a major proponent in moving her business forward. So give me what you can.
Can I kindly ask you to repeat the first part of that question? I apologize.
That's okay. That's totally fine. I was saying that I know you go hard for her, and that, you know, you've been a major supporter in her business. So talk to me about her recent success in Fashion Week and what that took for you guys to achieve. And then tell me how your marriage is structured, both as a business and then, you know, personally.
Okay. So with her fashion desires, I had, you know, when she told me that her parents wasn't able to send her to school because of finances, mm-hmm. then I told her, you know, this is when I was back in the States. So I sent her a message to say, why don't you start looking for you a school to go to? And she didn't know what I was talking about. And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, you want to study fashion, and I'm going to support you. I'm going to sponsor your education for you to go, you know, study fashion. So she found a school. We got her enrolled in the school, and I started funding her, her school and her education.
Amazing.
So
amazing.
She excelled so fast. She excelled faster than the other, students in the school, and they were amazed with her talent. So, from there, she actually stayed in the program for a little less than half the time of the program. And then, fast forward, we got her own shop in Kampala. You know, so
wow.
Got her a shop in Kampala. She started building a really nice book of business, really nice clientele. This is, I guess this is around 2016, 2017. So, mm-hmm. At the time, she hadn't came to the U.S. yet. So, you know, I would market her, you know, amongst friends and families and social media, you know, to my friends in the U.S. And people were amazed with her work. So she would start getting orders from the U.S. as well. So she had built clientele not only in Uganda, but then started building clientele in the U.S. So at that point, you know, we were just, you know, pretty much focused on, more so focused on the shop in Uganda. And then our oldest son, Junior, by him up there preparing for college right now, you know, I told her it was necessary that we be in the U.S. for a period of time to help him prepare for college. So we had applied for her a V visa, you know, for her to have a green card to come to the U.S., her and the baby, because I didn't want them to be down there and I'm up here. So we applied for the visa. You know, we were granted the visa. And when she came to the U.S., she's like, I want to have something to do. I don't want to just be here. I want to do something, you know, keep myself busy. And I was like, well, why don't you just start your fashion business back up here and, you know, build your brand here? So she's, you know, that's what she decided she wanted to do. We had, you know, took all the necessary steps to build out her website portal. We built out her website portal, started marketing her. And a gentleman gave us a call one day, and he was from New York Fashion Week. He told me he had seen her work, and he invited her out to Fashion Week. And this was like a few months after she arrived in the U.S. So we go to New York Fashion Week, and literally, she stole the show. It's not me saying it as a husband, but
literally. He want to be in the interviews too.
Sorry, he gets excited. She literally took the whole show at Fashion Week, and I will send you photos of her at the show. Every journalist,
I saw it. It was beautiful.
At the end of the show, every journalist, they ran to her opposed to any other designers, and other designers came to her and said, "Wow, I've been designing for this many years, and I still can't make the things that you make." She was the star of the show.
Yes, her looks were amazing. She worked with so many beautiful textiles and mixes. The just the way that she drapes is really, really pretty, and her execution is very gorgeous. So, I mean, she had this dress that was like sequins almost. It wasn't sequins, but it had like this iridescent. And it just dragged behind the model. This model was tall. She was beautiful, black, beautiful model. And the dress was fantastic. The show was amazing. It really was impressive. And so we know that it's going to be super successful. But tell us what we can do to help you achieve that success. What can we do to keep in touch with her or to, you know, even, you know, help with this journey?
Well, her designs are on can be found at nasaliwear.com. That's NASSALIWEAR.com. Also, she's on Facebook and Instagram, at nasaliwear. And then she's on, Etsy.com as well at nasaliwear. So, her designs could be found there. She do a lot of custom work for, private, clients. So, you know, she's easily accessible.
Yeah, she's amazing. So let's get into these babies, because I hear a baby, and I know that you have other children, and I know that you're a little older than Sarah too. So let's go into have you been married before, and do you find your age difference to be a challenge?
Okay, so I junior mom, she and I was married. I think that was we got married in 1999, and it was short notice. I think we got married like 2000. Junior was born in 2001. So I think we got married in 99 and divorced in 2002. So it was very, very short-lived. So, yes, I was previously married. There is a 20-year age difference between Sarah and I. My father and my mother, they had a 20-year age difference. My sister and her my husband, 20-year age difference. And my older sister, 20-year age difference. So
okay.
I think it kind of...
So typical in your family.
Yes. So her family absolutely love me. It's like, wow. I mean, I'm blown away by how much her family love me. And my family, like, tremendously, absolutely love her. So both of us receive a lot of support from our families.
Yeah, that's helpful. That's helpful. And tell me, you know, can you speak to the listeners on how you make, you know, that work so well? Is it because of your family, or is it because of your commitment to each other, or because of the rules and morals that you have both, you know, in terms of marriage? Like, what makes that union work so well, because you guys are doing so much successful work together?
Well, that's a perfect question. Actually, I think that's the best question so far.
Thank you.
Now, the reason that I'm gonna go back to one of the things I said earlier, that I wanted to experienced a relationship with an African woman. And one of the reasons why, I know I'm corny, this and the other, I always do research on everything. So, when I did research, I found out that how much they value marriage. So marriage in America, according to the statistics, according to the numbers, we have been seeing that marriage has been failing tremendously in America because we go off of a Western system. We go off of a European system, which is more of an individualism. It's about me. Now, when I my wife, the reason why our marriage worked so well is because my wife, when she was from the point that she was born and to the point that I met her, she was taught how to be a wife.
Yeah.
She was taught from childhood. When I'm in Uganda, whether you're talking to males or females, I have a lot of friends down there, male friends. I know a lot of females down there. And when you talk to people down there, what you will learn is they were all taught about marriage. Marriage is very important to their culture. My wife, she's a Muganda, of the Buganda kingdom. So, the Bugandas, they really believe in marriage. You know, it's really important. In America, we believe that you should meet someone, court them for all these years. The guy got to meet.
That's what they're telling us.
It's Western culture.
Right.
The guy got to meet the girl father. He got to ask for her hand in marriage. It's totally different in Africa. For example, in my wife's tribe, when they have what's called an introduction ceremony, which is a traditional wedding. So now with an introduction ceremony, which is totally different than what we know here in the U.S., when a woman's ready to get married, a woman is not going to bring all these different guys home to her parents from the point of teenage years up until the point she gets married. She's not going to bring home all these guys. Her parents meet one man in her lifetime, and that's her.
Wow.
And that's called an introduction ceremony. So, for example, a man could be, this young lady could be dating a man for 2-3 years, for example, right? And then her parents never met him. And the day that they get married is the day that the parents meet him. She's introducing him to her parents. That's called an introduction. So it's a real, real, real rich culture. So when my wife, with me and her, with our relationship, when we, trust me, at the beginning of our relationship, we had difficulties. Our difficulties was cultural difficulties.
I see.
We would fight over things that that were, this might be common to me because I grew up in the West, and this might be common to her because she grew up in Africa. So we would, but they would be different. So I would think that this should go this way because this is what I believe is correct. And she would believe that this should go this way because this is what she believes is correct. Once we got over that hurdle to realize that, hey, only problems we are having is cultural differences, then we was able to soar. For example, I'm going to give you one small example, and it was very difficult for me to understand. Actually, it was even annoying. My wife and I, if we had a disagreement, I would really, I would be ready to argue. I would be ready for us to sit down and we get this settled right then and there. And I would, for example, let's say if I'm like, I'll ask her, why did this or that happen? Or why, and she'll go completely 1000% silent. And I was like, why are you not answering me? I just asked you a question. Why are you not answering me? And I thought it was the craziest thing in the world. So even to the point, one time I even went to her dad, and I was like, me and Sarah, we had a disagreement, and I asked her this, asked her that. She was completely quiet. And he asked her, he's like, daughter, is that true? She's like, yes, Dad. And he's like, I'm proud of you. Good job. And I was like, what? He was like, that's what they were. And it was like, we taught her that she's not supposed to argue with her husband. She could say the wrong thing. So what I've learned from that is now if we have a disagreement, I understand that she's not going to want to talk at the moment, and I don't talk at the moment. It gives us both time to think. than to think rationally. So we both think very rationally, and then we come back at a time where both of us calm down, and she will say, she will literally say, this is what happened, and this is how I felt. And then I'm able to say, oh, I didn't know that's how you felt. This is what my intentions was. And we're able to come to a conclusion of this is how we will handle it the next time, so that she won't have this feeling and that I won't have this feeling. So
it's so good. It's so good that you brought that up, because, you know, even, you know, I'm engaged right now, and me and Saya are getting married. We went through a very intense, you know, courting season, but we made up our rules as to how we would govern our marriage during that time frame. And people have asked us, like, you know, I've gone to work and, you know, maybe just been, because I'm usually very jovial and happy at work. And then, like, you know, it seems like you're off. And I remember one lady asked me, did you argue with your fiance last night? And I'm like, we don't argue. And they're like, y'all don't argue. We don't argue. And they're like, what? Everybody argues. I was like, we don't argue. And the reason for that is similar to what you're saying, because, you know, it's a choice to go there. People don't think so, but it's a choice to go there. We've had some intense conversations, but we don't go back and forth with the yelling. He's very quiet, first of all. I project a lot because I've come from theater, so my voice carries regardless. But in terms of when we feel like this is something crazy, I know one of the things I've learned about him is he needs time to process, and I found out that a lot of men need time to process. So one of the things that men complain about in their relationships, specifically with women of our culture or of color, is the combativeness. And the combativeness comes from us knowing a lot, but it doesn't matter how much you know if nobody's listening. So, you know, you have to kind of learn to self-discipline yourself to get the same self-discipline you use at work. So it's not foreign. Okay.
Exactly.
A lot of us have this self-discipline to maintain our jobs and our money. Hey, Kari. Hey, baby. But you have to have that even more so. And then more importantly, with this person who's willing to be with you if you never got hired. So
correct.
I love that you brought that up, because that's one of the main reasons most people, I say this too, men choose the woman that they feel like they can talk to. They choose to marry that woman. And if they don't feel like they can talk to her, then they're not going to marry her. So I'm so glad you brought that up as one of the main foundations of the structure of your marriage, because I think that that's going to be really helpful for everybody who's listening this month on maybe what they did wrong if they didn't make it all the way through, and then, you know, a way to make it if they're thinking about getting married, because I know that that was real enforcement for me just listening to you say that too. You know, it's not foreign, doesn't come out of the air. We're not weird for not wanting to argue. It's good. Don't argue, you know. Take your time, figure it out, and then come back and talk about it. So I love that. Good for you guys.
Thank you.
Now, you put a company under your infant son, who we hear in the background. He has chocolate bars, right? Are you still pursuing that?
Right.
And how is that going?
Yes. Okay, so Kari bars. So in Uganda, we have a small manufacturing company, and it's called Monty Brothers Chocolate Manufacturing. So we, you know, gave Kari his own candy bar. We gave Junior his own candy bar. And now we're going to have Amari, so we have to give Amari something as well. So we manufacture chocolate candy bars from very fresh organic cacao beans that are found only in the mountainous areas in western Uganda. So it's found in the mountains, which is at a very high altitude. And in this particular region, the climate is, like, perfect for harvesting things like cacao and coffee. So it gives it such a rich aroma. So our chocolate candy bars and our chocolate drinks, they have such a unique taste. So that's Kari's company. And his candy bars is primarily for the Uganda market, the East African market region. And Junior's was slated for the U.S. market. So that's their company. So we just help manage it until later, so they become more of age, or at least Kari become more of age, so he could be involved with it.
Okay. Kari is tearing up your questions. But that's okay.
Kari is very, very, very active. He's a true African boy. Very happy boy.
That's awesome that he's so happy. And what made you want to incorporate your sons into their own business so early on?
Because they have to be entrepreneurs. They're black boys. And, you know, one of the problems here in the United States is, you know, I put a post on Facebook maybe a couple of years ago. And my question was, it was to black men, if we have a natural disaster that was to occur tomorrow, where mm-hmm. it wipe out all of our abilities as far as it wipe out the job, it wipe out the electric, it wipe out everything that we know of, what can we as black men offer to black women and black children? We have nothing for them to survive on. We cannot provide for them energy. We cannot provide for them water. We cannot provide for them food. Only thing we could provide for them is some nice clothes, some very nice clothes.
Yeah.
And you can't survive. You can't raise a family off of nice clothes mm-hmm. or tattoos. No, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical. You know, when I say I live the street life, I lived it in a way that most people can never imagine, most rappers mm-hmm. can never fantasize, or most movies can never depict. So I've lived that life, so I understand it. So it's not me trying to be stereotypical or judgmental. However, but we have to have something in which we are able to provide and protect our women. If we don't protect our women as black men, we have failed, period, point blank. So the reason why these boys have to have their own company is because they have to be able to offer something to a black woman. They have to be able to offer something to their children. And not only, you know, the chocolate company is just the crust of it, but my wife and I, even last night we were sitting down talking. If I try to take my, this is to help with my point. If I try to take my wife shopping, you know, if I want to take her to the mall, buy her some clothes, she's going to refuse. I don't want that. And I mean, literally, she's going to refuse. She's going to be like, no, we need to use that money to buy some more land.
Wow.
That's what she's going to tell me, because that's what they were taught in Uganda. You know, that's what she was taught in her household. So one of the bigger part of our plan is to acquire a couple hundred acres of land and to have water farms and to have energy farms. That way, no matter what, our children will have survival. They will have major survival. Our bloodline, our family will have survival. If the wheels fell off tomorrow, we know that our family would be okay. We would have food, water, and energy. And that's our goal for these boys.
That's awesome. And you know what? Talk to me a little more about that, because that's one of my questions too. Talk to me about your work in Uganda and what you've done there to kind of establish yourself and, you know, what you would like to do moving forward, what you're working on.
Well, right now we own a couple different pieces of land. We own one land for a chinchilla farm to help with my wife's fashion business so she can start producing chinchilla products, coats, jackets, rugs, blankets, whatever. So that's one of the investments we have in Uganda. And then we have the chocolate manufacturing company. We also sell, we have an alarm system company where we sell alarms for home security for people's homes. So my wife, she have many sisters. So her sisters help run and operate our businesses while we're not there. But the grand scheme of things, our number one, the future for us is in into land ownership. Because with land, you can, you know, I think it's Minister Farrakhan, I believe, that said it, that land equal wealth. You know, so without land, you can't be considered a wealthy people. So
100%.
We want to acquire a lot of land for the purposes that I told you, for the purpose of having water farms, having electric farms or energy farms, having food farms, agricultural land, and also for real estate development. So right now we're working on building a set of apartments in Uganda So we'll be going there in June so we can break ground on the first set of apartments. So we already have the land for that. So we're just, you know, that's our only goal right now is land.
Good for you. I love this. It sounds so much like what me and Saya want to do. I'm going to ask a silly question that I know the answer to, but that the listeners may not. I work really hard to disillusion people about Africa because I know America has done such a good job at trying to make Africa seem so backwards in culture, and it's not true. So was there a language barrier when you met Sarah, or is it much like Kenya where a majority of the people understand English?
Uganda, Kenya, most of East Africa was colonized by Great Britain. So the answer is simple. When you colonize a people, the first thing you do is make them learn your language and take your religion. So when you go to Uganda, Kenya, you're going to find Sarahs, Johns, Marys. You're going to find people with these, white names, these European names that are called Christian names, or you will find people with what's called Islamic names, Muslim names, because of the colonialism of the Arabs. So you have people speaking very good English. My wife, she speaks very good English, so there wasn't a language barrier. Everyone I've ran into, I've never met. Well, her grandmother, she didn't speak English. She's elder, so she didn't speak English. So they would always translate between me and her, and she would teach me the local language. She would teach me Luganda, and she really found a lot of joy in teaching me Luganda. Every time she see me, that's the first thing she would do is come teach me a new word, and I will enjoy it. So, Africa was colonized by Europe. So, all of your African countries, or the vast majority of your African countries, speak a European language, whether it's French. Whether mostly French and English is what you're going to find throughout the continent of Africa. And it's strictly because of colonialism. Even today, colonialism still exists because your school system throughout Africa is ran by Europeans. Your religion system throughout Africa is ran by Europeans. You cannot find a black person around the world that have their own education system. You can't find a black person around the world that have their own religion system. Whether you're in Africa, whether you're in America, in France, whether you're in Jamaica, you're going to find blacks that are Christians, Muslims, speaking English, French, all these languages, because those are the people that had owned us. Those are people that had controlled us. And the first thing you do when you own a person is you give them your language and your religion. That way you can own them forever.
Right. Tell me, how long did you date Sarah before marrying her?
I think we dated a year.
That sounds good. Tell me, what was it that made you choose Sarah? I mean, there's beautiful African women everywhere.
Do you want the truth?
I do. She's so pretty. I love her. Like,
the truth is, I wanted a woman that, I told Sarah, and I was very sincere in this, is that I'm not looking for, these are things I told her I wasn't looking for. I wasn't looking for an African woman that's looking to come to America, that's looking to be westernized, that want to be white. I told her I wasn't looking for an African woman that will put Jesus over me, that will put Allah over me. And I told her, if Jesus is more important to me or Allah more important to me, let them take care of you. Let them pay your bills. And that was one of my, that was very important to me because for me, I have no religion. I believe in nothing. I believe that she's my God and I'm her God. That's our household. We're the God of these children. So we provide for them. We provide for them. We protect them. We do the things that God is supposed to do for those in our household. So I'm the God of this house. She's the goddess of this house. So that's pretty much our structure. So, and that's what I was looking for. I was looking for a goddess. I wasn't looking for a Christian. I wasn't looking for a Muslim. She was a Muslim when I met her, but I wasn't looking for one that would put Allah above Anthony.
So when you got married, you say your vows into each other. You didn't say your vows to an entity.
Well, we didn't say vows. We had an introduction ceremony. So we had a traditional African-American African wedding. So Now, when you have an African marriage or wedding, it's very beautiful. So what happens is you have the bride family on one side, and you have the groom family on the other side. So just imagine there's a tent in the middle, and on the on one side of the tent is the bride side of the family, and then they're seated looking at the tent, and on the opposite side of the tent is the groom family, and they're seated looking at the tent. So each family's looking back and forth. Now, there's going to be on the bride side, the bride's father is going to be seated, and then on the groom side, it's supposed to be the groom uncle seated, and they, the father and the uncle sit and negotiate between each other. So the ceremony takes hours. I'm talking about, it feel like it's about 16 hours. It might be about 5 or 6 hours. So the groom uncle and the bride's father, they negotiate between each other the whole ceremony. So they are talking about the terms of how the groom is supposed to treat the bride. So they're making agreements at that moment. So and that negotiation takes a course of hours, like I mentioned. So you would have, for example, if I didn't have family there, it was, you know, I was given a spokesperson on my behalf, and that spokesperson will talk to her father and say, Anthony will do this, you know, to take care of Sarah. And then her father will say, well, this is what I want for my daughter. This is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. This is how she needs to be treated. And that's how it goes.
So, oh, wow. That's interesting.
So it's kind of like the vows is between the parents opposed to the two individuals.
On your behalf. Okay. So all right, so we're almost to the end of this interview. I am so happy that I got to sit down and speak with you today. But tell me, what has your marriage shown you about yourself, and how does Sarah help you be a better man?
I hate that question.
Ooh. I know you do, but you still have to answer it.
Ooh, I hate that question. She taught me this. She taught me one of the worst words in the English language. It's called patience. I hate patience. I've never been a patient person until she taught me that. So she taught me how to be patient and how to, how to be patient with myself, with others, and how to, like, see things differently from a different perspective than I was normally able to see them, because I was always impatient with everything. I wanted everything to happen right then. It had to happen right then. So that's the biggest thing I learned about myself. I learned how to balance things. I learned how to see things differently, you know, by being patient. I learned how to be a bit more humble. And those are lessons that she taught me. In Uganda, the people are so humble. You've never seen humbleness. They're so patient. Just for example, no matter what we're doing, when we're in Uganda, I could be negotiating with doing business. Maybe someone's late, you know, for a business meeting, or maybe they didn't finish a project. And you would have everyone there. They'd be like, even my lawyer, you would have my lawyer tell me, oh, just be patient. I'm like, wait a minute. You're supposed to advocate on my side. You're supposed to be down their throat telling them that this project's supposed to be finished yesterday. And you're like, just be patient. He said that he would have it done in a week. You just give him time. So they're very patient people. They're very meek and humble people. Very beautiful people. So that helped me. It helped me a lot.
I love it. I got two more questions for you, and then I'm going to let you get back to being amazing. But tell me, finish this sentence for me here. If I never met my wife, I probably would never have what?
Learn to be patient.
It's the same thing.
I'm being honest. Or had peace. I probably never have the peace that I have right now.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And then my last question for you today, after I just really appreciate you sharing so much as a father, as a husband, and as just as a leader in our community in terms of your forward thinking and a way to get back to being wealthy as a people. Just give us some advice
from your shoes on marriage as a whole. For those of us who are on our way there, like me, or those of us who are thinking of going there, what now from being married in a Western culture at first and that dissolving and then deciding to get married in a more rooted and traditional and culturally hardy way, tell me what your advice is on marriage from where you stand today.
Marriage is about values. Dr. Amos Wilson, he's one of my favorite scholars. And Dr. Amos Wilson, he teaches that love, that as we know it, is social political. It's a taught behavior. The way we love is very taught. The way we romance is taught. For example, we grew up listening to me growing up more so listening, you know, like as a young tween teen in the late 80s, listening to music by maybe Atlantic Star, listening to Babyface, mm-hmm. or, so you're listening to music about how you're supposed to romance a woman. So
right.
you're listening to music, for example, or watching movies about how you have to pull out her chair, that symbolism of love, how you have to give roses, that's the symbolism of love, mm-hmm. how you have to hold hands and walk in the dark, that's the symbolism of love. So we're taught how to love, right? Now,
right.
With that being said, all that we know of love is really learned. The West has no culture at all.
Mm.
America has no culture, period. Africa is rich with culture. And marriage is a very, very, very important culture. Family is very important in Africa. Without family, you have nothing. You can't build a nation without family. So that's the reason why families are very important. You could be poor, but have family and be rich. In America, when I was growing up, you had, if you asked a young lady, for example, what she wanted when she grew up, she would say that she wanted to be married, she wanted to have kids, and then she'd say she wanted to have a good job or start a business or whatever. Now, if you ask a young lady what she wants for her future, I want to get a doctor's degree. I want to start this business or have this type of position at a company, and then maybe when I'm 40, maybe I decide to get married, and maybe I decide to have a child. So that's backwards. It's backwards, period. You know, and I know that that's controversial. I know a lot of people say, well, you know, we should have the right to do it. It's backwards because we're all put on this world, on this earth, to be productive. Life is about productivity. Everything in life is about productivity, and we're not being productive if we're not reproducing. And when reproduction, you need family. So if you're not reproducing, if you're not replenishing, you're not being productive. No one go on their job and be counterproductive. You'll get fired, period. Any appliance you buy for your house, if it's not being productive, you take it back. You call it broken. So we're being a very broken society in America. We don't value marriage. In African culture, marriage is valued more than anything. Every young adult, when they're leaving college, for example, when a young lady is at the age that she's about to leave college, the first thing she say is, I have to take a husband home to my family. That's what she says. A young man at that age, he's looking for a wife. And a lot of, we learn in America, well, you should first get yourself established. You should first have something. But in Africa, you should first find that significant other, find love, and then together you will make it. Together you will establish yourself. You know, when my wife and I, we sit down, we discuss stuff together. She has been the most important piece of business for me. Without her, I don't think I would be able to prosper with business as much as I am with her. But I mean, and granted, like I tell you, I've been an entrepreneur ever since I was about 17. I have my ups and my downs, but I've never had the type of partnership that I have in her because she offers a lot of support, and that's important for a family. That's important for life and for marriage. So I would say with marriage, find a person that values marriage. One thing I learned years ago is the glue that holds marriage together is a person's values. If a person do not value marriage, they will divorce over anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they don't value marriage.
If
they value marriage, no matter what goes on, they're not the, let me see how to say, if they value marriage, no matter what goes on, they're not going to let themselves down. They're not going to, we refuse to let our values down. We will let down anyone or anything opposed to our values. So if our value is marriage, we will refuse to let that down. So we can't let our marriage go because that's our value. So I would say we as Black Americans in particular, we have to learn African values because that's who we are. We are African people, whether we like it or not. We know you have a lot of people nowadays say, I'm not African. I'm American. I was born in America.
Lord.
That's because that's learned behavior. I don't fault them. The more educated we become, my uncle used to call me an educated fool when I was a child because I was very educated, but I was very foolish. So the more educated we become, the more foolish we could become as well. So, you know, our blood is our blood. You know, you can't remove that. So that's what I would say about marriage is you have to learn. You have to learn about marriage. You have to learn about who we are as a people and what marriage means to us, not to the Western world. We can no longer try to appease and appeal to white people, to Europeans and their value system. White people have no values. They have no culture. So there, when it comes to marriage, if we follow the European marriage system, we would not succeed because that's not our system, period.
You speaking the truth there. You speaking the truth there. I appreciate how candid and honest you are about that. I honestly, truthfully agree. No matter what people think of what you've said today, whether they agree with everything or whether they're put off by whatever it is, you know, you said some very controversial things in this interview, but I like that because at the end of the day, you and your wife have a successful union together, and that to me is very important to represent the spectrum of possibilities for Black marriage, especially when people are telling us that we're not good at marriage in general. It's not that we're not good at marriage. We're not good at the marriage that you guys believe in. You can believe in a different kind of marriage, you know? You can believe in a different kind of marriage and go all the way with it, and I'm so happy that we have somebody who's an example of that on the show. So I thank you for sharing. I know that you have to get to your family. You just got home. But I thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. And is there anything else you want to say before I let you go back to being a wonderful husband and dad?
I mean, the only thing I can say, Rain, first of all, let me first wish you much success in your future endeavors and your marriage. I think
that's
the most beautiful thing in the world. My greetings to can you repeat his name for me?
My future husband, his name is Pernell. I call him Sire. His name is Pernell.
Okay. Yeah. So my greetings to him and to Legend. So, but the most important thing for us to have to, as Black people, and notice I always say Black people because that's what my concern is Black people because I'm Black, you're Black, my wife
that's
is Black,
right.
And my kids are Black.
Yeah.
So
right.
our most important concern should be self-preservation like any other race. And we have to learn who we are as a people, and we have to invest in ourselves. And as Black men, we have to be able to offer our women and our children something. And I'm not saying these little small things. I could buy my wife many roses, and she's going to reject. As a matter of fact, she told me, you better not come in this house on Valentine's Day with no roses. That's foolishness. Because it is. I mean, and if you study the history of why do men give women roses, you'll learn that that's a European concept, an ancient Roman concept. You know, a lot of these behaviors we have is from ancient Rome or different parts of Europe. So, but anyway, the point I'm trying to make is we have to learn who we are. We have to build our own system. We have to go back to our old traditional ways of how our people, the ancient African cultures, you know, where we didn't put our women, the man went above the woman. Now we live in this European system where the man stands above the woman, the woman behind the man. My wife is not behind me. We are a team. My wife is highly valued. Her opinion is extremely valued in how we make decisions together. So if you look at ancient African traditions, you have the god and the goddess. You didn't have just the god. That's a European concept. So we have to go back to the African concept where, a lot, and it, as a matter of fact, a lot of women were even more powerful than the men. And if we don't understand that, if we don't put these women in their rightful position, and we become the pawns on the chessboard protecting them, you know, then we're going to lose.
True. 100%. 100%. We are a matriarchal society in many different civilizations and empires before here. And at the same time, those same matriarchs knew the value of the men who covered and protected them. And we definitely, this is one of the reasons why we started, well, I personally started the throne room with the men first. And, you know, next year I may do the throne room with specifically all women. But this year I wanted to focus on the voices of men for that reason, because I do feel that this culture over here has done a great job of trying to mute you all and make you uncomfortable speaking your truth and saying what you need to say. But here, we've had many men come on here and say things that you may not like, but they have the right to say it. And that's what I would love to continue to do. So I just thank you for what you've given us today. I really do. And I really hope that you guys have been touched from it. So go ahead, go back to Kari. He wants to play with his dad. and I will talk to you soon. But thank you so much for sharing with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. You got it. Anytime. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
The Throne Room interviews are conducted for discussion. A recap of each interview will take place every Monday at facebook.com/RainRaphael. For more updates, questions, comments, or concerns regarding the Throne Room dialogue with me, Rain Raphael, follow Queen Rain Podcast on Instagram or call us at 678-58-QUEEN. But please, keep your message brief if a response is necessary. This is the Queen Rain Podcast with Queen Rain, your aggressively positive Black Queen of Hearts. Good night.